We're going to begin here on the top of Lamed Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara is speaking to the Mishnah of Echeres Hadriani, the Hadrianic clay. My Hadriani, what is this that the Mishnah is speaking about? I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel. Echeres Shel Hadrianus Kesar. It was clay or earthenware that came from the Emperor Hadrian. Ki'ata Rav Dimi Amar. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he had an even deeper explanation of it. Remember here in Bavel, they're trying to understand what's in the Mishnah that was written in Eretz Yisrael. The people in Eretz Yisrael were very familiar with the Romans. The people in Bavel, much less familiar with them. So first of all, they have some sense of what it is, but then they get a Mesora. When Rav Dimi comes back from Eretz Yisrael, he brought many Mesorot from Rabbi Yochanan and from Eretz Yisrael. Traveled back and forth. So here he's also bringing information about what exactly is meant by this Echeres Hadriani, where in Eretz Yisrael they would have had much more exposure to it. Karka bitula haita. There was this virgin earth. Shelo abda adam me'olam. That was never used or worked. Abda. He worked the land, but not ah, and then they planted there a vineyard. Ramileh lechamra begufei chibore. And then they took the wine that was produced from that and placed it into white earthenware utensils. The way Rashi writes it is the whiteness had to do with the fact that they were brand new. So there were utensils that had never been used before. The reason being that newer earthenware utensils tend to absorb a tremendous amount of what's put into them because they have yet to be filled in terms of their ability to absorb. So that was the high level of absorption. You could say begufei chibore is that they used just pure clay. They didn't use anything else. There was nothing else mixed in with it. Maitziluhu lechamrayu. Then it soaks up or it absorbs the wine that is placed inside of them. Umitavruluhu v'chaspin. And they break them into shards. Vidaru v'hadayu. And then they carried them along with them. Vuhecho d'matu. Wherever they reached, wherever they went. Taruluhu. They soaked them in water. Vishatu. And it made the wine. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. V'rishon shelanu. Kishlish shelahen, that the first of ours is like the third of theirs. The way Rashi explains it is that the first wine that comes out of our grapes, we press the grapes and we make basically the best of our wine. It's the equivalent of the third of theirs, which means that they're already soaking the cheres for the third time. So they soak it once, soak it twice, soak it the third time. When they soak it the third time, that's the quality that we have at our best level. So they were talking about the qualitatively, it was a superior wine by a significant amount, and that's the comparison here. The way I would have read it, and I think I saw one of the Rishonim also mention it, is that when they press the grapes, they press them, and then they take the liquid out, and then they pass water over the grapes, and they press them again, and through that process, you do it a number of times. So we could have said that Verishon Shalanu Kishlishi Shalhen, that our first pressing, or our first pass of water over our grapes, is the equivalent of their third pressing, or their third pass of water over their grapes. But again, just an indication of how much qualitatively superior the wine was. And the truth is that Hadrian spent a lot of time on the road. This was likely the reason that he needed to have some sort of mechanism for carrying the wine with him. It was both a basic staple, also a way to keep the troops happy that he was traveling with. And so this is the way that they produced this wine and then took it along with them. They mentioned that there are some that suggest that it was actually kneaded into the clay, not that they had the clay fired already and then they had it be absorbed into the clay, but rather still they did it with the wet clay. They kneaded the wine in there. So then it solidified inside the clay, and then when they broke it, crumbled it again and then soaked it, it produced the wine that was stored inside of it. All right. Ibailu Maulu Smoch Ben Kare Amita. Wait, most Rishonim read it is that the shards from the Hadrianic wine, they brought these shards along with them. If you took one of those shards and you used it as a coaster or a cup to put under the feet of the bed, you know, like today where they use them to hold the wheels of the bed so it doesn't move. Similarly, they had them for their Kareya Mita because they had mud or wet floors and it used to cause the legs of the bed to rot or sink. So they used to put these items under them to hold them up. So if you do that, is that problematic? Because we know there's both an Iser Shtiyah and an Iser Hana'ah associated with them in the Mishnah. Now the Iser Hana'ah is not on the Cheres, the Iser Hana'ah is on the wine that's contained within the Cheres. So what is the relationship between the wine that's in the Cheres and the Cheres itself? That's what Gemara says. Rotsevi kumo ayidav devar acher shari. You want its existence for something else. Is that mutar? O asur. So you really don't care about the wine that's in there, but you need to preserve the wine because you're preserving the clay or the earthenware shard that you need to hold up the bed. Rashi over here translates it, He wants it not because the wine does anything for him, and he has no interest in the wine whatsoever. So he wants the kiyum of the wine, not because the wine, but because the shard will remain intact. And you could have read it that he wants the wine intact because that gives heft, or that gives content to the kli cheres. And that might be another way to read ayidei davar acher, which means that you want the kli cheres, and you also want the wine because the wine gives integrity to the kli cheres. So you don't really care about the yayin, you care about the cheres. But the cheres is benefiting from the wine that is giving it, and therefore it's a derivative benefit that you're getting, not a direct benefit from the wine. Just to note, that's the nature of the question according to Rashi. The Rabbeinu Chanina, on the other hand, notes here, Ma'uli smoch bodama charasim shekvar sharu b'mayim. What can you use the earthenware after they've already been soaked in water? And then there's no longer any wine inside of them. So Rabbeinu Chananel sees the question as being the residual kli cheres. Can you utilize them? I mean, the assumption is that the kli cheres itself, for sure, there's no question about. So the question of what's been soaked through, how does that affect the kli cheres or the residual kli cheres? And in the note here, he says, L'chora divrei Rabbeinu elu tzarich biur. He says, I don't understand what he's asking then. If they're already soaked, there's no wine left in them. What does it have to do with Rotzei B'Kiyumo? Then why is there any issue of keeping them around? Why is there any chashash? So he obviously thinks that even if you soak them in the water, that somehow there would be some residual Isur Hana'ah associated with the Kli Cheres, because we never rid it totally of the Stam Yenam that was in there. On the other hand, the way that it seems that Rashi and the others are learning is that the wine is still contained in these shards of pottery, and therefore the question is there an Isur Hana'ah that affects the Kli Cheres as well, or is the Isur Hana'ah only when you utilize the wine or utilize those pieces of pottery in a way that is absorptive, meaning that you are putting wine on it, you're keeping something in it or soaking it, is that when there's a problem of Stam Yenam? So now the question that you're asking, which the Gemara will get to and answer, is how is this different than other cases that we have in the Mishnah? For instance, no dot, kan kanehem. Right? All of those are asurim. There the Chachamim disagree. Rabbi Meir says asurim isur hana'ah, and the Chachamim say that's only nisur shtiyah. So why should this kli cheres be different than any other storage utensil by which we say that you can use the storage utensil as long as you don't put anything in there that's going to absorb from the flavor that's in the walls? And similarly over here, why don't you say the same thing? The Gemara will answer, we mentioned what we mentioned in the Mishnah, is that there's a difference. By the kli cheres over here, the wine is be'en. The wine actually exists. It wasn't that it absorbed flavor of wine. It actually has real wine content inside of it. As opposed to when you're talking about storage utensils, then you're talking about tam yain. And the question is there a difference between the polate, the tam of the yain, versus polate, the yain itself? And the answer will be yes, because you see the Chachamim do not disagree with the Cheres Hadriani, whereas by the case of the Kankanim and the Node, they say that it's only Asur B'Shtiyah, not Asur B'Hana'ah. And so the question by the Cheres over there is exactly that. You have Stam Yenam Be'en. That Stam Yenam Be'en that's embedded inside, does it have a different implication to the item versus just Tam? Tam is Ein Bo Mamash. Tam has no substance to it, despite that fact. We say tam ki ikar. That's a din that we'll get to later on in the Masechta, which is that flavor has the same status as if something actually flavored or gave over the flavor into the other item. So tam ki ikar is only true once the tam has imparted that flavor to it. But the tam in and of itself has no mamashut and has no significance to it. And we'll see that in the Bali HaTosafot and in the Gemara, that allows you to utilize some of these items for certain things as long as you're not absorbing or taking the tam out. As opposed to the Cheres Hadriani, you have real wine inside of it, then the question is much more significant because you're dealing with Stam Yenam. Alright, so now the Gemara says, Tashma, Rabbi Loza, Rabbi Yochanan, we have a machloket, Rabbi Loza and Rabbi Yochanan, Chad Asar, V'chad Shari, one of them says it's Asur, one of them says it's Mutar. We have in our Gemara is printed here, V'hilchata Kamand Asar, the Loch is like the one who says it's Asur. You can see over here in the Masorah Shas, he says, Medivri Arosh, Nire Dologaris, that we don't have it. The truth is that it appears in the Yerushalmi, not here in the Bavli, and probably was lifted out of the Yerushalmi, and that's because in the Yerushalmi, they actually assign the positions, which is that Rabbi Elazar is the matir and Rabbi Yochanan is the oser. And we know when you have a machloket, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, we pass them like Rabbi Yochanan, who's the Rebbe, and not like Rabbi Elazar, who is the Talmud. So likely, because of the Yerushalmi, and because of the fact that the position of Asur was associated with Rabbi Yochanan, that's why this came into our Gemara, which is Hilchot Keman de Asar. Meitevein. So we have this Tosefta. Hadar Dorim, Varuk Baot, Shel Ovdei Kochavim. So Rashi translates Hadar Dorim as being pitchers, and Aruk Baot as the Targum, the Aramaic for Chemet, which is a leather canteen or a leather flask. So that means that you're talking about both utensils that are made out of clay, as well as things that are made out of leather. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel over here says, Hadar Dorim Perish Chaviot Shel Eitz. It is a wooden barrel, which would have been unusual in their time, but actually became much more common later on and through the Middle Ages. That's the only way that they store wine. But nevertheless, the Rabbeinu Chananel suggests that these dardorim are wooden barrels, and therefore then it's not speaking about anything that we've spoken about so far, which is clay cheres. Over here we're speaking about wooden and leather utensils, whereas for Rashi, it's also speaking about earthenware utensils, because the first thing is a pitcher. So those are Ovdei Kochavim. Yayin she'Yisrael kanus behen. Jewish wine was stored inside of them, asur b'shtiyah. Then it is restricted in drinking it. Umutar b'hana'a, but you're allowed to get hana'a from it. That's the shita of the Chachamim in the Mishnah, who say that the tam causes a problem for the wine that's in there. And therefore, the wine now becomes asur, does not have a status of stam yenam, so that it will be asur b'hana'a as well. It's only asur b'shtiyah because of the flavor that's imparted into the wine that is stored inside of it. Heid Shimon ben Guda, lifnei b'no shel Rabban Gamliel. So he gave over testimony, or told over the fact, before the son of Rabban Gamliel, al Rabban Gamliel, about Rabban Gamliel, sheshata mimenu ba'ako, that he actually drank from it when he lived in Ako, velo hodulo, and they did not agree to him. The lo hodulo, you can read it in one of two ways. Lo hodulo means that the other chachamim did not agree with Rabban Gamliel, or velo hodulo means they don't agree with the testimony of Shimon ben Guda that Rabban Gamliel permitted such a thing. No dot shel ovdei kochavim. So by the way, the first part of the Tosef that we're bringing is not so relevant to us. The second half that we're looking for, which is Nodot Shel Ovdei Kochavim, is thinking about these canteens or flasks of the Ovdei Kochavim. Shimon Gamliel Omer Mishum Rabbi Yeshua Ben Kapusai. So Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel now says, in the name of Rabbi Shimon Kapusai, Asur Lasot Mehen Shtichin Lechamor. You can't use them as throws or saddles for the donkeys. Va'acha Dirotze B'Kiyumo Ayedavei Devar Acher. This is why we brought the Tosefta, because this latter pattern of the Tosefta sounds exactly like our case. You're taking what was once a flask that had absorbed into it wine or stam yenam, and then you're now using it not for a flask, but rather as a throw or a saddle on top of the donkey. You don't really care about that which is absorbed into the leather. You simply care about the leather that you're using now as the saddle. So this is Shirotze B'kiyumel Dever Acher, V'ktani Da'asur. And there we see that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that it's problematic. Gemara says now, according to your reasoning, kankanim shel ovdei kochavim litziru. Then the kankanim of the ovdei kochavim should also be asurim limizban. Sell them to ovdei kochavim. Maishna nodot, maishna kankanim. Why would you make a distinction between nodot and kankanim? The question that's being asked by the Gemara here is strange, because what is the problem that they're trying to deal with? Where along the way says you're allowed to use kankanim? Where did he indicate that kankanim are mutarim? You can see here in the Masoret Hashas, he says, midivrei tosvot nire delo garsin and lay, that this piece here, l'tameich kankanim shel ovdei kochavim, is not part of the girsa. We'll discuss that in a second. So amarova gzeira shemi baka nodo. We're afraid that maybe his flask or his canteen will burst. V'itlena, he'll take the saddle. He'll take this throw that's on the donkey, v'yitferena gebe nodo, and he'll use it as a patch for his canteen or flask. So now, the difference between a leather canteen or flask and a earthenware one, or even a wooden one, is that if an earthenware one breaks or bursts, you don't end up patching it up. It doesn't work so well once you have to patch it up afterwards. Now then, leather canteens or leather flasks can't be patched up. They did it on a regular basis. So if you have the earthenware utensil burst, then you're not going to worry about him patching it up with earthenware pieces that are from the kankanim that were once used. People don't use shards of pottery to patch another piece of pottery. So then you don't have to worry about it. But they do use pieces of leather to patch a leather canteen or a leather flask. In that instance, if his now current canteen or flask bursts, he's going to need a patch. And he's going to say, look, I got this piece of leather that's running on the back of my chamor. Let me just cut a piece off of it and put it in. That in and of itself is not a problem. The problem is now he's going to store his wine inside of that, and now it's going to absorb from the flavor of the patch that's there. So again, what they're saying is that there's nothing inherently wrong with the leather and using the leather. Our first assumption was, oh, there's a problem with kiyumoya devei davar acher. And so that's why you can't use it. You can't put it on the donkey because we're afraid that that's kiyumoya devei davar acher. It's a sore. But it says, no, there's nothing wrong with using it. It's all exera otum. And the way they prove that is because why do we ignore kankanim and only speak about nodot? Why are they only speaking about leather flasks and not about earthenware utensils? Now, the question is more pronounced if you have the explanation of Rashi. Because according to Rashi, the first part of the Tosefta that we quoted had earthenware and leather in it. Then you come to the second half of the Tosefta and only has leather in there, no earthenware. So then it's apparent that they're leaving out kankanim, and that explains the question of the Gemara, where are the kankanim all of a sudden? According to the Rabbeinu Chananel, it says the first part of the Mishnah is wood and leather. Then in the second half, they're speaking about leather, and now we're asking about kankanim. Cheres doesn't make so much sense why the Gemara is looking for kankanim. Otherwise, you have to say that they're just asking, why is it the common practice that we do get hana'ah from these kankanim, despite the fact that we're saying here that it should be asur? And again, we'll discuss the Yusa'ot and the Balei Tosafot in a second. But therefore, the Gemara says that it must be something unique to leather. And that's what it is. It's a gzeira because of leather, using the leather as a patch, not because it's an isur of kiyumo ayudei davar acher. Ulamanda amar rotze bi kiyumo ayudei acher asur. According to the one who says that you're not allowed to keep these items around when it's a kiyumo davar acher, maishna kankanim disharu. So then why is it mutar to use the kankanim? Amelacha hotam. Later, the Isurei Be'enei. Over there, the Isur does not exist in reality, because it's just tam, it's just flavor. Ha'cha ita the Isura Be'enei. Over here, the Isur exists as an intact. The question is whether this should be in the Girsa at all, is the subject of this Tosafot over here. Tosafot's question really stems from the fact that the Gemara questions from the Braita, and doesn't question from our Mishnah. If Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah says that they are a Surim, and that Isur means Asurim in the Kankanim, then that is Tashmisha Yadei Davar Acher of the Kankanim in the Mishnah. And then why don't we ask from those Kankanim? So the Balei Tosafot therefore suggests that that can't be Rabbi Meir's position. And the Balei Tosafot give two approaches to the Gemara. Both of them have to deal with Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah. And that is because in the Mishnah, when it speaks about Nodot, Ovdei Kochavim V'Kankanayim, V'Yayin Shel Yisrael Kanus Behem, and then you have Jewish wine that's inside of them, Asurim V'Isuran Isur Hana. They are asur, that is written in plural. What is the plurality of asur going on? So there are two possibilities to read this. One is to read it that Rabbi Meir's oser, not only the wine inside of it, but also the kankanim or the nodot. That's why it says asurin in plural. The other way to read it is that you mentioned nodot and kankanim. So asurin means that the wine found in either one of those is asur, and that's why it's in the plural. That will lead to the two girsot that the Balei Tosafot have over here. So the first way that he reads it is, Elavadai, Kankanim, the Rabbi Meir, Nami Shari Bahana'a. According to Rabbi Meir, Kankanim are Mutar Bahana'a, just like the Chachamim say. Vahada Kamar Asurim, the fact that he says the word Lashon Asurim, Lashon Rabim, the Mashma Dodot, the Kankanim, Lokai, Elayayin, Shabatocha Nod, Batocha Kankan. As we said now, you could read that Asurim referring to wine found in either one of these items, and that's why it uses a plurality. And then he says, Ve'it, Svarim, the Garse Batar Hachshnuya. After we have the answer of the Gemara over here, there is a Girsa that we have in our Gemara, which is what Tosafot says, indicating that Tosafot didn't have that Girsa. Lamanda Mar, Rotsebi Kiyuma, De Devarachera, Asur, Maishna Kankanib Deshari, Da Rotsebi Kiyuma, De Devarachera, Umasik Hatam Leke Isura Bene, Hachaita Isura Bene. That's exactly what our Gemara says. He says, Ufi Girsa Zo, Mashma, the Manda Sar, Lo asar rotze b'kiyumah yidei acher, el b'cheres hadriani, mishum de'ita l'isura be'enei. So he says that the answer to that question, of what the Gemara is saying over here, is that the Gemara wanted to understand what is the person who is oser going to say. Both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim seem to indicate that cheres or kankanim are mutarim behana'ah. Why is he oser behana'ah? So the question is, this person, we know it's Rabbi Yochanan's position, versus the position of the Tanaim and the Mishnah, who clearly say that Kankanim are Mutarim Ana. That's not only the Kachamim, that's even Rabbi Meir. The answer of the Gemara is, Heres Hadriani is Be'en, whereas the Kankanim, it's only Tam, and not Be'en. And that would be the answer of the Gemara. That means that this question has nothing to do with the previous part of the Gemara. It's a question going back to the origin of the statement, which is, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says it's Asur, how do we deal with the fact that the Mishnah seemingly says that it is Mutar? So that's one version that the Baal Tosafot have. And then he brings a second view, which is, Od Yesh Lefarish. There is another possibility, the Olam Rabbi Meir Asar Kankanim Bana, that the Asurim in the Mishnah means both wine and the Kankanim themselves. The Mochram, the Obdei Kochavim, and you're not allowed to sell them to Obdei Kochavim. So now, what are you going to do with other items that are further on in the Gemara? Elefad Nehachi Asur. Even Shagufa Yayin Niflat B'Shel Yisrael, Havei Kamo Be'en. Because the wine is absorbed into the barrels, it's as if it's Be'en. V'Yedi'a Mamasho. And its substance is known, Aval Yayin Mitbatel Ben HaKvashim V'Lo Yedi'a Mamasho. As opposed to things where we're dealing with pickling and other things where the wine disappears and you can't find it or you don't have any substance to it. This is different over here because the kankanim actually absorb wine into them. And therefore the machlok between the chachamim and Rabbi Meir might be about the nature of the absorption of the kli cheres. Rabbi Meir believes that the absorption of the wine has some mamashut to it. And that's why there would be a surim ba'ana. Whereas for the chachamim, it's only tam. It's only flavor. There is no mamashut that is absorbed into the walls of this item. And the way you explain the difference between our Mishnah and this statement at the bright over here is because here, I would say, means that the item's there, but it's never going to come out. You don't want the item itself. On the other hand, in our Mishnah, we're saying you're not allowed to sell them and get hanah from the kankanim, according to Rabbi Meir, that's when you're selling them to a goy who's going to store things in them. And when he stores wine in there, it's actually going to leach the tam out, and he wants that tam to go into his wine, and therefore he wants the kiyum, and that's why it's a sur ba'ana'a in the Mishnah, and that's why you can't question from our Mishnah to over here, you would say, kiyumo yadei davar acher. So then he says, l'fik perzeh, according to this, the gross, the manda asar, maishna kaganim deshari, then you don't have the gear, so the manda asar, according to one who made it asur, maishna kankanim deshari, the Ainin Yan Kakanim, the Rotsev Kiyumo. It has nothing to do with the one who wants to keep it around. Tama de Shari Shari Afilim Kor. Latei Lutokho Yain de Mutar Bana. The person who says it's Mutar says it's not only Mutar to sell them, it's Mutar to sell the wine that was kept inside of them. The question is not only on the one who says that it's Asur Bahana'a. A Rotsev Kiyumo is Asur, Asur Bahana'a. Even on the according to one who says that Rotsev Kiyumo is Mutar Bahana'a. That's only mutar ba'ana'a, it's still a sur b'shtiyah. Our Mishnah has nothing to do with rotzeh b'kiyumo miyadei davar acher, and that means that the question of the Gemara over here, rotzeh b'kiyumo ayadei davar acher, is not only the one, the manda asar, who says it's a sur, even the one who says it's mutar, there's still a question, because even the mutar over there is you're allowed to use the kli cheres, but you're certainly not allowed to get hana from the wine. And yet, by the kankanim, he allows you to sell it to the goy, and allow the goy to have the wine leach out and flavor his new wine. So over there it's mutar bahana, not just in the kli cheres, but even the tam or the wine that's inside of it. So what's the difference? Even according to the one who says it's mutar, there still is a distinction between the kankanim of the Mishnah and the rotzeh b'kiyumo d'acher, the karei amita that are sitting on the kli cheres. Therefore, your question shouldn't just be on the manda asar, it's even on the one that is matir. Why is there a distinction between the Mishnah and the case of the karei amita? So according to the first version, or the first girsa, the Mishnah and the Rotzeh B'Kiyumo are speaking about the same case, and that's why the question is only according to the Manda Asar. In the second Girsa version, where Rabbi Meir is observing the Mishnah and the Rotzeh B'Kiyumo are totally different cases. And therefore the question at the end of the Gemara applies to everyone in Rotzeh B'Kiyumo. How's that different than the case of our Mishnah? And so therefore the say the Manda Asar is not according to the one who was Oser. It's even according to the one who was Matir. Then you also have the same problem, which is, why are the kankanim and the wine inside of them mutar versus the heres hadriani, where we're going to say it's asur. And therefore you would leave out over here the girsa of the man that says, it would say, b'kiyumo, ayded b'acher asur, ma'ishna kankanim desharu. It's not even just according to him. It's according to the one even who says that it is mutar, or according to everyone. Why is it that the wine that's contained inside of these items is mutar b'hana'a? And the answer is, imparting of flavor versus imparting of be'en, which is that the Heres Chedriani has real wine inside of it, whereas the flavor that's imparted by these kankanim is only flavor, or that's it alone. All right, now, the Baal Tosfot will come to a conclusion, which is important, which is, mashma, tashmish, that the one who wants it to be asur says it's asur if you want it to stay around for any usage. Upaskinan hilkotak mandasar. And we pass on the local like the one who says it's asur. Hilkach, yesh poskim, tzarich leizaher shalola sot shum tashmish, bekelim abluim chametz bepesach. That if you have kelim that have chametz flavor that is absorbed into them, that you may not utilize those items on Pesach at all. That's the fact that you want it to exist. Aval enu nira the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with this. The mikamar hatam leita the isure beinei. Isur doesn't exist. Mashma the heka the leka isure beinei lo mitzar behana'a. When there is no isur be'en, there is no isur hana'a. Umikan pasak Rabbeinu Tam. So here's the loch of the maisif in this. They wrote a bluot mi basar bechalav. Aidei shenit bashel behen. If you have kdeirot that absorbed meat and milk into them, asur to use, and put hot items in them, to put cooked food in them, even maybe to leave things in there that will soak over 24 hours, can't use them for that. Shemutar lasim etokham davar yavesh. You can put dry goods into that utensil, kagon tvua, like wheat or other grains. You can store dry goods in these things because the dry goods don't absorb from the tam, and there's no inherent isur in this item. Isur, if the tam is imparted into something else. But there is no isur in the item itself, because it's not be'en, it's only a tam. And similarly, b'chein k'derot asurot mishum chametz bepesach. If you have your chametz utensils on Pesach, mutar letet l'tocham davar yavesh. You can put dry goods into them, and it would not be problematic. But davar lach, well, any liquid would be problematic. Not even if it's hot, even if it's cold. But a liquid, because we have the idea that if you leave a liquid over 24 hours, that it absorbs the flavor that is in the walls of that kli. What you have here is a big kula that the Rabbeinu Tam is promoting and saying that even though it sounds like from here that we pass them like Rabbi Yochanan, that if you wrote say, kiyumoi, da'idavacher, it's a sur, that is uniquely associated with things that are be'en, only if the item really exists. But if the item is not be'en and it's only tam, then that din does not apply, and it's mutar b'hana'ah, as long as your hana'ah is in a way that doesn't take out the flavor from the object. And that means you can use your chametz kelim on Pesach, as long as you're not using them in a way that would allow for the tam to be exuded from the kli. That means use it for dry goods, store things in it, or when you have a kli that is now basar b'chalav, it's something that cannot be, for instance, kli cheres, that absorbs basar b'chalav, you can't kasher it. There's no way to kasher it. So that utensil, instead of using it for goods that would absorb from it, you can use it for goods that are not. You can store dry goods like grains in there. You can use it for storing your balls or anything else, objects that don't are affected by it. But that is a big kula that Rabbeinu Tam has in making that distinction. And he's pointing out that there is this difference based on the Gemara between Be'en and Tam. Right now, the Gemara brings an additional version of this Tosefta, which is Velo Hodulo. They did not agree to him. Viramini. We have another case here. Yaina ba viruk ba'ot shel obdei kochavim. So wine that comes in these leather canteens or flasks of the obdei kochavim. Asur b'shtia mutar b'hana. Not allowed to drink it, but it is mutar b'hana. Heid Shimon ben Gouda, lifnei b'no shel Rabbi Gamliel. He gave testimony before the son of Rabbi Gamliel, al Rabbi Gamliel, bad Rabbi Gamliel, sheshatam mimenu b'ako, that he actually drank it in Ako, v'hodulo, and he agreed. Now here, it makes it clear that the Hodulo in the previous Tosefta was the Bno Shel Rabban Gamliel, which is the son of Rabban Gamliel in the previous case, denied that his father ever did such. And here, the son of Rabban Gamliel does agree to the facts that are stated here. So now you have a stira between the two versions of the story. One story says the son of Rabban Gamliel agreed, and one version of the story says the son of Rabban Gamliel disagreed. So my lo Hodulo, the Kamar Hatam, what does it mean over there that they did not except what he had said, kosi ato. That's the people who were present there. Aval bino module. On the other hand, his son did agree to it, and that's what I said to you before. There were two possible readings of lo hodulo. It's either the son was responding in the negative, or the chachamim were responding in the negative. But that's what the Gemara is now saying. You read the other one as being the chachamim responding negatively, But the son acquiesced that that is what his father had done, and that story is correct. Or ibaitema guda lechud veguda lechud. The spelling of Shimon ben Guda here, in the first Tosef, it's spelled with an aleph, and the second Tosef, it's spelled with an ayin. So Shimon ben Guda are two different individuals, and therefore the stories are two different stories. But you still have to deal with a number of problems here. First of which is, yet Benosh of Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rabban Gamliel, in one case, based on the second version here, he agrees, and in the second case, he disagrees. So how come he changed his mind between the two cases? That's number one. Number two is, if Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is commenting in the previous Tosefta, he brings Rabbi Shimon Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai, Asur Lasot Mehem Shtichim. He doesn't even let you make them into Shtichim for a Chamor because of the Gzeira Otu, but it's clear from that he wouldn't let you use them as Nodot. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is the son of Rabban Gamliel. And so how could it be that the son of Rabban Gamliel is agreeing in the second Tosefta that his father drank from it? In the meantime, he's not even let you store it in the flasks. So how do you reconcile between those two? So the Bali Tosafot over here, make a suggestion. First of all, you have to know that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel were very popular names because there were a number of generations of this. And we have Rabbi Gamliel Zakein, Rabbi Gamliel Rishon, Rabbi Gamliel Sheini. There was a successive number of generations that had these names. So that could solve your problem just in of itself. But the Bali Tosafot solved it in a different way, which is very interesting. He says, the Chora Mashma, Dao Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Kamar El, Asur Lasot Shtichin, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Kapsai, Kamar, Veloi Lei Lo Sevirle. He's saying it, but he doesn't hold of it. He's bringing over the Misora from Rabbi Yeshua Ben Kapusai, but he doesn't hold of it because he's the Beno of Rabbi Gamliel over here that says that Rabbi Gamliel even drank from it. Inami. Rabbi Gamliel the Hocha, who Zikno Shel Rabbi. He is the grandfather of Rabbi, the Misadar of Mishnah. Ubenohu, his children are Rabbi Chanina Ben Gamliel, Achi Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Aviv. So there is a Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel who is the father of Rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, the Misadar HaMishnah. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi has a father of Shimon, his grandfather is Rabbi Gamliel. The assumption here is that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over here is that son of Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi is the grandson. But it says here, Benosh Rabbi Gamliel. Benosh Gamliel would have been Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Turns out Rabbi Shimon has a brother named Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina is Rabbi's uncle. And so now the Benosh of Rabbi Gamliel in the case over here is not Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, but rather Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, the uncle of Rabbi. And thereby he solves the problem by saying that there are two different sons of Rabbi Gamliel that we're speaking about. So rather than saying that it's a different Rabbi Gamliel that we're speaking about, or a different Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel we're speaking about, says it's the same one, but it's two different sons of Rabbi Gamliel. Now, why did Rabban Gamliel drink from it? Why did he think it was mutar? There's not a single person in the Mishnah that thinks that it's mutar b'shtiyah. Both the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir say it's asur b'shtiyah. It's a question about hana'ah. Why was he drinking from it? There are two possibilities. One possibility is that he believed that if you stored it in there for a short duration, it would not absorb the flavor. And that this was for a short duration, and that's why he drank from it. Because it hadn't sat in there long enough to absorb the flavor of the flask. The other possibility is that he believed that over a period of time that the flavor would be discharged from it, and therefore there wouldn't be a problem of tam in the drink, and therefore it would even be mutar bishtiyah. Again, we don't accept that. Both of those views are rejected. So even if it's done for a short duration, or even if it's been a long time, we still say that the flavor is imparted when you store it in there, and then we'll get to, in tomorrow's daf, and throughout the Masechta, about how you can kashur when you know that certain things have discharged what's in them, and then you can use them. There's a massive Tosafot that takes up almost two amudim for Shabbat's daf on Daf Lamed Gimel that discusses different utensils that expel and how do you rid them of that absorption so that you can use them. Others suggest that maybe Rabban Gamliel had a different view about Stam Yenam, where he agrees there's an Isur Hana even Bekoshu, but still, but no tain tam, it requires a tam of shishim, and that's why he thought it was okay to drink. Or the possibility that the drink that was contained in the flask was not actually wine, and that he felt that only wine was problematic in terms of having it in the flask, but not other liquids. Or also the possibility that these flasks were only used for short-term storage, and therefore they never really absorbed the tam of the stam yenam, and that's why it wasn't problematic. All right, so now the Gemara continues, v'orot libuvim. When it comes to these hides that have a hole by the heart, Terabanan, Ezo or Labuf, Kosher karua keneged alev. Anything that's ripped by the heart. Vekadur kemin aruba. And it's cut out or carved out like a window. And that it's not just like a slice or a cut, but it's actually an opening that was made there. Yeshalav koret dam. If it has any dam, any residue or residual blood on there, it's asur. Ein alav koret dam. If it doesn't have any residual dam on there, mutar. Then it is fine. Now, koret dam over here obviously does not mean wet blood. The blood over there is already dried. And as Rashi notes over here, it's galdi belas, crusta, a crust. A crust, or basically a scab, or blood that's coagulated on the item. The reason being is that if they took out the heart while the animal was still alive, which was the practice, then obviously blood would have come out of the animal at that point and stained the hide. So if there's a stain on the hide, that's a good indication that something went on over there and it was utilized in that way. Then if there's an absence of blood completely on the hide where the cut is, that's pretty good evidence that it wasn't done when the animal was alive. Because if it was done when the animal was alive, there would be blood over there. The fact that there is no blood is an indication it was done after death, and that's not a problem, because that's not these orot libubuvim. Am Rav Huna, lo shanu ela shelo malchol. That's only true if they haven't salted it yet, I mean they haven't worked the hide, or they haven't processed the hide. Elo malchol, asur. Seimu malchol, habarato. Once they process the hide, then if there's no blood on there, the reason there's no blood is not because there wasn't blood, it's because once you start the process, the chemicals will eat away at the hide and then take off anything like blood or something that is on the surface of the hide. Because we're going to say is that the salting or the processing took away the blood, and therefore you have no longer evidence of the fact that there wasn't blood on there at some point in time. Shimon Gamliel Omer, Bizmacha Kera Shalo Agul Asur, Mashuch Mutar. The cut is circular, then it's problematic. If it is a longwise, then it is mutar. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Halacha to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Halacha in the Mishnah is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So two things to say about this. The first of which is the Baya Tosafot note over here, is that there is a principle throughout Shas that any time Rabbi Shimon Gamliel appears in the Mishnah, halacha kemoto. The halacha is like him. So he says, these Amoraim clearly didn't have that principle, because now they're coming to tell you halacha to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. If they had the principle that the halacha is like him in the Mishnah, they wouldn't need to tell you that. It would have been pshita. So the fact that they're telling you that shows you that they do not have that principle. The second thing is, Amalei Abaye, Halacha Miklal Dupligay. If you're telling me the Halacha is like Shimon Gamliel, sounds like the Tanakama disagrees. Now, we just explained in the Gemara, what are Orot Libuvim? Those are hides that have a hole cut in them, not a slice cut in them. That sounds exactly like Shimon Gamliel, and there they were explaining the Tanakama, they weren't explaining Shimon Gamliel. So, Amalei, Maynaf Glachmino. So, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi of Abaye says, what does it matter? If the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, why does it matter if someone argues or doesn't argue on him? Either way, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. What else do you need to know? Samalei, Gemara Gomor, Samurta Dehei? What, Gemara is just like a song or some poem that you say. Over here, Rashi explains, Bitmia. How could you say that? Abaye Tamidosh Rabbi Yosef. Abaye is the Tamid Rabbi Yosef. Vikamalei, Atam Elamdenu Lomar Halacha Kamoto, take a Zemer Bauma. And we should just say it without knowing anything. That why is there a need for this halacha, or whether there's someone who argues on him. Or in essence, what he's saying to him is, you just want us to puppet or repeat everything you're saying, but you're not giving us the insight as to what's happening over here. Gemara is just a song that you just have to memorize and they just keep singing it along. Or is there a need for havana or understanding in what you're saying? Is the wording not important? Are the words of the Gemara void of any meaning? And therefore, you just say whatever it is, and you don't have to look into it, and you don't have to remember it. That's one way to learn it. Or, Rashi in other places, in Shas, says a slightly different variation of that would be, is it that you're just memorizing over here? The words of the Gemara are just like a song that plays in your mind, or you just repeat and repeat, but they have no inherent value to them. And so that you just learn because you don't have the capacity to do anything else besides just repeat or regurgitate whatever is said to you, and that Torah has no meaning, and it's no better than any other literary work or any other poem, but you just memorize it and has no meaning or depth to it. So either way, he's questioning Rav Yosef's approach to this and saying, you can't just tell us, take it as it is. The fact that you say halacha means that there's some implications from that. It's not just a game of memorization. And then you have to give significance to wording. You can't just be dismissive of the way that it's said. Don't just say it's like words in a song which have no meaning. The words here have meaning, and we have to be careful about how we say it. Basar nichnas over dat kochavim mutar. The basar that's taken in on the way in is mutar. As we said on the Mishnah, that Rashi says that there is no such thing as hekdesh for basar that goes in for Avodah Zarah. Therefore, it only becomes problematic once it's entered into the area of the Avodah Zarah. Mantano, who's the author of our Mishnah? Amr Abchia bar Abba, Amr Abyochanan, the lo kirabi Eliezer. So we can't find who the Tana is, but we know who the Tana isn't, and that is, it's not Rabbi Eliezer. Di kirabi Eliezer, hamar, stam machshevet oved kochavim labodat kochavim. The default mindset of an oved kochavim is that it is dedicated to Avodah Zarah. So that means that already on the way in, he's already dedicated it to Avodah Zarah, and therefore it's going to be asur. Now I just told you there's no such thing as hekdesh by Avodah Zarah. So how is it possible here that he has it be asur earlier on? So that's based on Rabbi Eliezer's position later on in the Masechta, which is that Rabbi Eliezer says that when they shecht the animal, they shecht it stam le Avodah Zarah. That means that it's not just that you're coming along here and saying, oh, it's hekdesh le Avodah Zarah. He took an action of shechita that he dedicates to Avodah Zarah. Now that's very important because the Bayit Tosafot raised an issue, which is, you're saying from here, because of this section about taking the meat in, that it's mutar b'ana, and Rabbi Eliezer would disagree and say it's asur b'ana. For that reason, you know that Rabbi Eliezer is not the author of our Mishnah. Let me give you some other examples who are making that Rabbi Eliezer is not the author of the Mishnah. For instance, Orot Lububim. Only the hides that have holes in them are asur. That means that hides that don't have holes in them are mutarim. According to Rabbi Lezer, stam machshava and obey kuchavim is Avodah Zarah. The gvina beit onyaki, the cheeses that came from beit onyaki. There we said the problem is that they're shechting the calves, Avodah Zarah, and then they're curdling the milk in the kebot of Avodah Zarah. But that means that only the animals that were used for beit Avodah Zarah were problematic. In other cities where they didn't have that problem, the gvinot would not be asurim. Yet Rabbi Eliezer says, Stam, the Oved Kochavim, is the shame of Avodah Zarah. So why should it be Mutar? So for that reason, the Bali Tosafot make a distinction within Rabbi Eliezer's position and say the following. The Yesh Lomar, Rabbi Eliezer, Nami Shari Sharorot, Vishar Gvinot. He agrees with the remainder of the Mishnah that Gvinot and Arot that are not used for Avodah Zarah are Mutarim. Zolomin and Stam, Machshevet Oved Kochavim, Lavodah Kochavim, El Derech Shchita. Only when he shechs the animal do we say, Shchita, and that's true for us as well as Jews, Shchita does not appear in the Torah. The only thing that in the Torah that appears Shchita is in regards to Kodeshim. The Zvichat Kodeshim mentions the fact that you have to do Shchita, but that's only in regards to Kodeshim. The din of Shchita Tchulin comes out of a Halacha Moshe B'Sinai based on the Psukim in Dvarim, which seem to matir baser ta'ava, and then we take a process that's used by Kodeshim, and then use it by chulin and apply it to chulin. So the same thing here. When it guards to an Oved Kochavim, when he's killing derech shchita, that's a, call it a religious ceremony, a religious action. And therefore, stam lavodat kochavim. But if he kills the animal by just stabbing it, shooting it, whatever he does to the animal, there's indications or not that it's lavodat kochavim. And that way he makes the distinction and narrows the scope of Rabbi Eliezer to say shchita. And that's why over here, he says the basar that he's bringing in, was shechted. And since it was shechted, because he's bringing it to the Avodah Zarah place, stam machshava is Avodah Kochavim. And that's where Rabbi Lazar takes his position. The meats on the way out are asur, because they have a status like zibchei meitim. My time, it's impossible that it was not utilized in the ceremony of the Avodah Zarah. Otherwise, why is he carrying meat out of there? It's clearly to Krovet Avodat Kochavim. Mani, who's the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. It is Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, the Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira Omer, Minayin le Tikrovet Avodat Kochavim Shemetame Bo'ohel. How do we know that Tikrovet Avodah Zarah has a din of Tumata Mate to the point where it's Metame Bo'ohel? Shenemar, because the Pasuk in Tehillim, Vayitzamdu the Baal Peor, they bowed down or they became close or fell in love with the Baal Peor. And then they ate from the sacrifices that were there by Baal Peor, and it calls it Zibchei Meitim. So Vayuchlu, they ate, and they were eating from Zibchei Meitim. So therefore, the meats or the foods that are associated with the Tikrovet Avodah Zarah has a status like Meitim. And Meitim are Metame Bo'ohel. And so do over here, Ma, Meit, Metame Bo'ohel, Av Tikrovet Avodah Zarah, Metame Bo'ohel. Just like Meitim or Metam Milol, so too is Avodah Zarah. So first of all, there's a machloket about the extent of the Tumah, whether it's Tumat Meit, Tumat Nevela, or is it Tumat Sheretz. But it seems like everybody agrees. Is Asur. And here the Baal Tosafot raised a very serious issue, which is, how is it that only Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateir is the author of this position? If you remember, right after the Mishnah asked, how do you know that Yayin Nesech is Asur? Ah, that's a Dindoraita because of the Hekesh between Yayin Nesech and Zvachim. And then the Gemara used the same pasuk over here to make it into Zivche Meitim. And then Meit, that's Asur Bahana'ah, which we learned from Egla Rufa. So too, Avodah Zarah is Asur Bahana'ah. But you see that even the Chachamim in the Mishnah, or it seems like everybody over there, they don't say that's from Yehuda ben Mateir's position. That seems to be, everybody agrees that Yayin Nesach is also Doraita from the exact same pasuk. So why is the Gemara over here all of a sudden suggesting that this is only according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira that says that it's like Zivchei Meitim? So the Rabbeinu Tam over here brings the first distinction. First, Rabbi Adan to Tekrovich, Ukein Pnim, things that are done in Tekrovich and Zerah that are mimicking Avodot that we would do in Kodesh, Kegon Zvicha, Kitur, and Isuch, Moda Rabbonan de Yofinam Meit. So he says that the Rabbonan agree that Zivchei Meitim applies when they do something that is similar to our Avodah. That would include Zvicha, Kitor, Nisuch, which they're Yayin Nesef. So that's why it has the status of Zivchei Meitim. On the other hand, Tikrovet, She'ena Kibbinim Panim, which is not an Avodah that is found in the Jewish worship. Plige, they argue. So that's how he solves the problem. The Psukim that we brought right after the Mishnah, we're talking about Nisuch HaYayin. That's something that they replicate from Motzin Mikdash. There, even the Chachamim agree that it's Zivchei Meitim. On the other hand, here, where it's just meat that's being presented before the Avodah Zarah, we don't have anything like that in the Mikdash, and they disagree with Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira. The Re disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam, says, I don't have enough space over here to write all the reasons that he's wrong, but go look in the Gemara in Chulin, but he gives a different distinction over here, and he says that the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira. Everybody agrees that Avodah Zarah is Zivchei Meitim. The only question is, what are the implications of that? The implication of that, according to the Chachamim, are, it's Asur Bahana'ah. Just like Meit is Asur Bahana'ah, so too is Avodah Zarah, Asur Bahana'ah. That's it. Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira says, not only is it Asur Bahana'ah, it all has Tuma, like Tuma Tam Meit. And so the difference between them is, how significant is this comparison to Zivchei Meitim? Is that simply Asur Bahana'ah? Or does that mean also, Matame Ba'oel Matame Kem Meit? And the Baal Tosafot would say it's Mduyak in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says about the meat that is coming out of the Avodah Zarah, it says over there, Vayotzei Asur, Mipnei Shehu Kizivchei Meitim Divei Rabbi Akiva. Because it has the status of Zivchei Meitim, well that's what Rabbi Akiva says. Why do you have to say that? In every other part of the Mishnah, it says, Vayotzei Asur. And that would be it. What is Mipnei Shehu Kizivchei Meitim? What is that extra line adding? Baal Tosafot would say, it's adding in that there's Tumah. That's why the Gemara says that it's got to be Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira, not the Chachamim. Because if it was the Chachamim, you would have just said, Vayotzei Asur. It's Asur Ba'ana'ah. That's it, the end of Mishnah. Why do you need to say, Mipnei Shehu Kiz Zivchei Meitim? Because it's like Zivchei Meitim. And even the Kof HaDimyon also helps you with that. It's Kiz Zivchei Meitim, which means that it also has Tumah, like the Zivchei Meitim. And that's why the Gemara here says that it's authored by Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira, and not by the Chachamim, because they speak about the Tumah. And that's also Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnayot in Shabbat speaks about the similar thing. There are Mishnayot in Shabbat that compare items to different items. And one of the things there, Rabbi Akiva compares Avodah Zarah, says because of that, it's Mitame. So that actually would fit also, because this is the position of Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, and that is Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira's position. Right? Ha'ochim le'tarput, asurim le'seit le'tetimem. They're on their way to the Tarput. We discussed extensively in the Mishnah what Tarput is. Whether it's a word, it's Rafim, whether it means Torfa, or whether it means a specific type of Avodah Zarah. So you're not allowed to transact with them on the way in. Amar Shmuel, Oveik Chachamim Alech the Tarput, Balicha Asur. On the way in, it's Asur. Dazilu Mode Kamei Avodat Kochavim. Because then he's going to give thanks to the Avodah Zarah. The Baal Tosafot say, take a look earlier in the first parak where we discussed this extensively, whether the problem is that he's going to say thank you for the transaction, or whether he's going to use it as tikrovet Avodah Zarah, and then the implications of which reason you give as to what is really Asur today and what you're not allowed to transact with them. You saw the difference between Rashi and the Baalei Tosafot in that matter. That's all things that we discussed in the first parak. So now he says, b'chazara, on the way out, mutar. My dahava, hava. Whatever happened, happened. Whatever Avodah Zarah that he did is done. And on the way out, we don't worry about him transacting with him because he's not going to do anything with it. At this point, he's not going to go thank his Avodah Zarah. He's already on his way out. Yisrael aleich letarput v'alecha mutar. Yisrael on the way in to go worship this Avodah Zarah is mutar to transact with him. Dilma hoder ve v'lo azil. He might suddenly have some pangs of guilt or some reluctance to go in there, and he might not do it in the end. So therefore, you can rely on that to transact with him on the way in, because he may not end up going to the Avodah Zarah. Bichazara, on the way out, asur. Then you can't transact with him anymore. Kevan, the Ovik Bey, Hadar Hadarazil. Once he goes over that threshold of leaving Yadut, or leaving God, and worshipping Avodah Zarah, he becomes a cult member, in a sense, and he is then totally drawn to it, to the extent that if he's on his way out, and he gets a deal, he'll go back and thank the Avodah Zarah. Meaning that the Jew who adopts the Avodah Zarah is more chareid al devar the Avodah Zarah than the Goy himself. The Goy himself, that's his Yerusha Me'avot. So he goes, he does what he has to do, and he leaves. He's not going to go back again. The Jew, who now is making a choice to go to the Avodah Zarah, and then on his way out, he gets like a big thing, a big deal. He thinks that the Avodah Zarah gave it to him, and he's going to go back. So once he crosses the line, he's really going to go all in, and that's the problem. Va'atanyo, Yisrael aleich letarput, ben malecha, ben mechazara asur. Don't we have a brayta that seems to indicate it's problematic, irrespective of where he's on the way in or the way out? Amri Ravashi, kitanya hi, Yisrael mumar, the vaday azil. That's why I met a Jew who's already crossed the line, and he's already worshipping this Avodah Zarah. He's in Yisrael mumar. Over there, you know he's going to the Avodah Zarah. There you can't transact with him and say, oh, maybe he won't go. We know he's going, he's been going for a long time. If it's his first time, that's the case where Shmuel says that you can't transact with him because he might hesitate. Tarabanan, Ovei Kochadim ha'yolech li'yurid. The Ovei Kochadim that's going to the Yurid, which is generally like a fair or a marketplace for the Avodah Zarah. Ben Balicha, Ben Bechazara Mutar. Whether he's on his way or his way out, you can transact with him. Yisrael olech li'yurid, Balicha Mutar. Yisrael that's going to the Yurid on the way in, you're allowed to transact with him. B'chazara, asur. On the way out, you cannot transact with him. Maishna de Yisrael, the chazara asur. Why is it on the way out that you can't transact with this Jew? Damrei avodat kochavim zovin. They must have been selling avodah zarah in the fair. By the way, I don't know if it's still true, but many years ago, when he used to go outside of the Vatican, all the vendors that were there that were selling the chachkarai outside of the Vatican were Israeli expats that were selling the chachkarai outside of it. I only know because I had my yarmulke on or a hat on, and one of them started to say Shalom Aleichem, and they speak to you in Hebrew, knowing that you're kind of Israeli, like a fellow Israeli. But it was interesting that many of the vendors that were there were Jewish, as well as the fact that we had davened in the shul in Rome in the morning, and they recognized us from the minyan that we had been there. So they were the ones selling it. So anyway, just as a sidebar to the story, but here, he says it's a story. Dami Avodah Kochavim Zavin. They were selling Avodah Zarah. So now in their hands, they have monies of Avodah Zarah. They made the money off of selling Avodah Zarah, and now they're taking that money, and you're going to transact. You're transacting with them, and you're going to get monies of Avodah Zarah. The Yerid is not a worship of Avodah Zarah. The Yerid is a marketplace that's made in honor of the Avodah Zarah. It's not Avodah Zarah itself. So there the fear is not that he's going to go back and be moda to the Avodah Zarah. The problem is that he has the May Avodah Zarah in his hands. That's the problem here. Ovei Kuchamim Nami. What about the non-Jew? Let's say Neima, Avodah Kochavim Zavin. He was selling things for the Avodah Zarah. The May Avodah Kochavim, and he has money for Avodah Zarah. Why should there be a difference? Ela, Ovei Kochavim, Aminan, Glima Zavin, Chamra Zavin. If it comes to the Ovei Kochavim, we'll say that he was transacting. He went to the fair. Who says he was selling Avodah Zarah stuff? He might have been selling coats. He might have been selling wine. He might have been selling something that has nothing to do with the Avodah Zarah. Yisrael Nami. So say the same thing about the Jew. Neima imor glima zavin chamra zavin. Why don't you say that he was transacting in other items, not in Avodah Zarah? The same dispensation you can give for the non-Jew, you should be able to give for the Jew. Iita tahavale. If he was really selling coats and wine, hachav mizavinle. He would have sold it to the Jews locally. The reason that he's selling it over there is because the Jews don't buy what he's selling. He went to the Yerid to sell items that he can't sell to the Jews. Ovei Kochavim is going to the Yerid because that's where all of his compatriots are. That's where he goes normally. So he goes to sell there, he'll sell anything there. He will sell not just Avodah Zarah items, he'll sell anything that he has to market. And then the Jew generally will market to his own folks first, and then only later go over there and market things that he can't sell to the Jews. So that's evidence of the fact that whatever he sold there was definitely associated with Avodah Zarah, and therefore it's Demei Avodah Zarah, and you can't transact with him on the way back. Now that's interesting, because I think you could argue, I think that you could make a distinction. Part of it might be sociological in their time, which is that Jews in general contracted or transacted with their local Jews, and wasn't just true of Jews. People who lived in areas tended to do business with the people who were local to them, and that they would avoid going to these other places. Today, people many times go to a fair because there are a large number of customers or buyers at those types of fairs. You could argue here that the Jew has coats and he has all these things, but he doesn't have enough demand locally. He's going there because there are large numbers of people that are found there. If that was the case, I think you could come up with a dispensation in order to allow it. The problem here is that it's a Yerid of Ovid Kochavim, which means that it's a marketplace that is dedicated to the Avodah Zarah. What's the Jew doing there? You have to look at all the circumstances, and I don't think it's as black and white as the Gemara makes it, because you have to look at why would a Jew be attending this type of marketplace? It's simply because he needs volume and he needs customers. Maybe then it would be mutar. But on the other hand, if it's all dedicated and you're paying taxes to the Avodah Zarah, then you have a problem of being there at all. So you have to look at all the different parts of the puzzle before you decide it's a sore. But here the Gemara makes that distinction that the Jew would have sold locally if he wasn't selling items that weren't Avodah Zarah to the people at the Yerid. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph.